the shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network.
Score! Fabian Zetterlund on a one-time pass. Hooks the defense as a kid. Deke shoots. Deke shoots. A spectacular rush from end to end by Mikael Granlund.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Cunning down the right, across the line. Shoots one on net. Stick save made. No real rebound. And now Cunning doing some pushing and shoving with Montour. And we get a major harmonic convergence of players back behind the Seattle goal. Cunning involved. Kovic everybody can't. Getting involved on the play. Uh-oh. Kovalenko in the middle of it all. Right. Here's Dunn pushing and shoving. And the officials are trying to break everybody up as Henry Thrun is trying to swing in the direction of Kaapo Kakko. But now Henry Thrun has dropped the gloves with Vince Dunn. Two defensemen really battling it out. Henry Thrun out of Harvard battling it with his helmet taken off. Vince Dunn giving him a couple of uppercuts. And Thrun hanging in there, coming up with a roundhouse right. And that is the main event now with everybody pushing and shoving.
I think we just get away from our identity as a team. We started turning pucks back. We weren't playing behind them. Just kind of, we kind of go off script, and then it's a snowball effect, or at least that's what happened tonight. So we've got to stick to our identity, and we know what that is. It's just that's been sort of our Achilles heel all year, is struggling to play to our identity for a full 60 minutes and do it not just one game, but two, three, four, string some games together. Obviously, not every game is going to be perfect, but we find a way to get away from the way we need to play.
All right. Good morning, everyone. How are we all doing? Wow. The San Jose Sharks last night played a game that I was not prepared for them to play. And Mario Ferraro, credit to him, and that's why he wears the A on his sweater. But he acknowledged that the Sharks can get taken out of their game and they can lose their focus and they can just be derailed a little bit too quickly. And I think that there are a number of reasons for that. The overall talent level of the team is not up to par with where it needs to be a successful team in the NHL, and it is a hard season that they've endured up to this point. Since the break, they have not been the same team. Since the Mackenzie Blackwood trade, they had not been the same team, really, if we want to get back to it. And you had a night where, there was a couple of weird plays that got past Askarov. He was not at his best. I wonder if fatigue is catching up with him, but just overall, it was a Sharks team that was not ready to go from the jump, and they fell behind early in this game. And even though they did have pushback, it was not enough. And this is what I've seen too many times from the Sharks this year. They get down 1-0, and you feel like there's about to be a little bit of a surge, and it takes them a while to find that surge. They settle things down, they score a goal, but then there's nothing after that. And I think that is what is lacking with San Jose far too many times, is that they just don't have the ability to take control of a game with any consistency. Now, they have done it a few times this year. I'm not saying that it's beyond them. Every team in the NHL is going to win some games. And you saw the way that they played against Pittsburgh the other night. They were able to take advantage of a team that had been playing poorly. But once again, against a team that had been in a desperate mode, and this Seattle team, compared to their expectations, is most definitely in desperation mode, came out with a greater intensity. And even when San Jose tried to push back after tying it up in the first period, Seattle didn't bend and they didn't break. They just played their game, whereas San Jose kept on getting away from theirs. And so I do take into consideration where the Sharks have been this year, where they are going. I know the deadline is hanging over guys' heads. I know that there is most definitely thought about who's going to be here, who is not, but I guarantee that on the father/mentor trip that these guys wanted to do more for the people that were with them on this trip. But the Sharks, they are who we thought they are. They get taken out of their game. They are not able to play the way that they want to play time and time again. And it's something that needs to be improved with talent first and foremost. And, when we look at this roster, compared to last year, which was populated by a number of guys who are no longer in the NHL, we do see a better level of talent overall, but it's still not good enough. That's what I keep on coming back to. It's like you see who these guys are, you see what they're capable of. As a collective, it's just not good enough. And I think that we can break down you know, multiple ways in which the Sharks could be better in individual situations, not turning the puck over in their own end, not giving it away in the neutral zone, not trying to be too aggressive with passes. One of the things that they did the other night against Pittsburgh that I really liked was that they seemed to wait a count before moving the puck, which you want to move the puck quickly. I'm always a proponent of that. But at the same time, you don't want to do yourself in. You want to make sure that you hold on to the puck and don't give it up too easily. And the Sharks were a little bit hurried. And I understand you get down in a game, you're trying to do anything to force something, to make something happen. And sometimes that just doubles down on what you've been doing poorly and gives more opportunities to the opposition. So for San Jose, this was not a game that they're going to walk away from and feel that they did what they needed to do to win. They got it handed to them. And I think what's disappointing also out of this is that you expected it out of Florida. You knew there was a good chance against Tampa or Winnipeg or Boston or Vegas, these teams that have really, you know, taken it to San Jose this year. Seattle's not a great team. They are desperate, but they are not what I would consider a great team in any way, shape, or form. They are, you know, barely ahead of the Sharks in the standings. They have now 49 points to the Sharks, 36. And while that is relatively significant in terms of a 13-point gap, they, you know, have 8 more wins than San Jose, and that's really just, you know, it's not like it's that much better of a team. This is a team that is 1 point out of 7th in the Western Conference, and they are 7 points back of Vancouver. So for all that we have seen from this side of San Jose this year, they should be able to play better against Seattle, but much like we've seen this year, they don't play as well against the lower tier competition. They play better against the top tier teams. They don't play well against the lower tier teams, at least not with consistency, because like I said, they had beat Seattle twice already this year. But yeah, this was one I was not expecting, and I'm a little bit disappointed by, and I think that San Jose is going to have a nice little weekend here. They've got some time off. They don't play until Tuesday, so for San Jose, that will give them an opportunity to really kind of put things in order and try and get healthy as well. I know the injuries are definitely a factor of what's going on, and they are piling up on San Jose, but you know, you can't just let the season get away from you. You've got to keep on pushing. And, you know, these are tough games coming up in the next three. They have Montreal on Tuesday. They have Vancouver on Thursday. And then they have Dallas on Saturday before we go into the break. And then after that, we only have 3 more games at Calgary, at Winnipeg, and at Montreal before we go to the month of March, which brings us right into the trade deadline. We will see what happens. All right, let's get in listening to some of these highlights from last night's game. We are going to talk to Roxie Bernstein a little bit later, but right now it started off poorly for the Sharks and Yaroslav Askarov.
Off the draw, CeCe pinches, but they bounce it past him. Bjorkstrand lead pass. Here comes Stevenson. Score! Seattle gets control of their own zone, and Chandler Stevenson takes an absolutely beautiful wrist shot after collecting that pass, had plenty of time, and he gets career goal number 97. He's only 2 away now, make that 98, 2 away from 100 in his National Hockey League career. Seattle is up 1-0.
The Sharks were really out of sorts to start off that first period. They weren't specifically flat, they just were not sharp. But they did push back strongly in the first period, and it did get a goal from Carl Grundstrom, which tied up the game, which made you feel a lot better about where things were heading. After this, though, Seattle completely took over in the second period. The Sharks were simply not there, and it just got out of hand rather quickly. 2:03 into the second period, Oliver Bjorkstrand made it 2-1.
Ferraro steps up at the red line, knocked it away from Stevenson. A chance, though, for Seattle to get it back. Here's a pass on the left wing side. Tolvanen waits for some help, gets it from Dunn, who walks toward the slot, shoots, tip, score! Well, that's Oliver Bjorkstrand in front of the Sharks' net, getting a gift as it took a really weird bounce as the first shot by Dunn was deflected, and all Bjorkstrand did was he had a stick on the ice and he knocked it into the open goal. No chance for Askarov. Suddenly, it is 2-1, Seattle.
And then just 54 seconds later, Brandon Montour made it 3-1.
And the Kraken bounce it back down the ice into the Sharks' zone. Nice play with the backhand, though, by Thrun. Put it up the boards. Uh-oh, turnover by Walker Duer. Sends to the middle. Here's Montour shooting. It's gone! Two goals, 52 seconds apart. This one off a turnover by the Sharks. Walker Duer, who put it on a hope play diagonally across his own zone. That is a no-no in the National Hockey League, and Montour took advantage by beating goaltender Askarov to make it 3-1 Seattle.
So at this point, the Sharks had given up two goals 51 seconds apart, and it's not even 3 minutes into the second period. And then 3 minutes later, Jaden Schwartz would make it 4-1.
Penalty basically over right now, and now the Sharks get the shot, and Wallman fans on the puck, and it's Hedman, and out of the penalty box, it's a breakaway for Schwartz. He's in, he shoots, he scores! Well, a situation in which absolutely nothing went right after puck was moving around all across the offensive zone. Out of the penalty box comes Jaden Schwartz. He gets loose on a breakaway, and he beats Askarov to make it 4-1 in favor of Seattle.
And then about 2 minutes later on a 5-on-3, it was 5-1 and completely out of reach for San Jose.
Seattle kept it in. Schwartz got it back to the point. Montour right side, feeds left side McCann to the near boards, and cycling back now, Stevenson moves to the right side to McCann across the ice. Score! Montour sliding into the left circle after that great movement by Seattle, and there was a mile of seam that was wide open there for the Sharks. And up top it goes on Georgiev. Montour, his second goal of the game, 10th of the season. This one is a power play goal, and it comes at 7:52 of the second period to make it 5-1 Seattle.
So at that point, Seattle had completely taken control of the game, out of reach totally. It was 5-1. Yes, about halfway through the third period, the Sharks would strike back. Tyler Toffoli getting his 18th of the year. But at that point, it was far too little too late.
Rebound, Henry Thrun goes in to keep it in play. He gives to Celebrini, right wing half boards. He twists on Veneers, throws to the slot. Toffoli has, he scores! Tyler Toffoli getting the goal he's been looking for. And that's from Macklin Celebrini to make it 5-2. The Kraken have the lead, but Tyler Toffoli of the San Jose Sharks gets credit for that one, and that'll be his 18th goal of the season.
All right, let's get to some post-game reaction out of this one before we talk to Roxy Bernstein, who was on the call last night for ESPN. Let's hear some more from Mario Ferraro. He was asked about the team not being able to respond properly to when they got down in the second period.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what time in the second exactly that we kind of got off script, but you know, I do know that it's harder to play the game when you're chasing it, and so like I said, that snowball effect. We have to find a way to just come together, calm down, and get back to what we need to do. You know, we're having trouble getting back on track when we do go off script. Sometimes it's going to happen. Like, it's going to happen throughout games. Every team does it. You know, they have 5 minutes of a hockey game where they let off the gas or they're struggling, but you know, good teams find a way to kind of collect themselves and get back to what they're supposed to do, and we didn't do that tonight, and you know, it showed in them being able to run up the score.
Andy was also asked about the impact of all the injuries the Sharks have been dealing with lately, which in my opinion are most definitely a factor, but also something that every team in the NHL has to deal with.
No, it's never too much. Obviously, having injuries is, you know, it's tough. You want to see your players in the lineup, and you know, obviously we got some key guys that are out of the lineup right now, but it's kind of part of the season. Everybody goes through it. You know, Pittsburgh was missing Malkin when they played us, so every team, you know, kind of goes through these phases of injury, and you know, we're hoping to get our guys healthy again and get them back on the ice as soon as we can, and we're hoping that guys, you know, try and stay healthy. I think this break coming up is going to be beneficial for us. You know, we got a few games to play as hard as we can and try and get string together some wins, and then, you know, a little bit of a break to get healthy again and get guys back out there will be beneficial.
Head coach Ryan Warsowski was asked to summarize what went wrong on this night.
Yeah, we were slow all night, even in the first. Weren't ready, you know, from the First goal against, we're late on a pinch. We don't get above the center, something that you learn in training camp. So mental mistakes, and then we weren't skating, we weren't getting above people.
So for San Jose, it was just a matter of, like Ryan Warsawski said, they were a step behind all night. And, you know, I don't understand exactly how that happens, considering they had a few days off, considering they had some time to get themselves ready for this game. This was not what we were expecting from San Jose, and I don't think it's what Ryan Warsawski was expecting when his team had some rest, was coming off of a win, had their goalie of the future in net. Obviously, injuries are a factor, and this was not their best game overall, but you know, there was no way that anybody saw this game going to a 6-2 blowout loss to the Seattle Kraken, a team they'd had success against earlier in the season. Now, San Jose, they're capable of losing to anyone. I'll acknowledge that. But, you know, they should have had a much better game than this. I think that's the one thing we can all agree on. This was not San Jose's best effort. And Ryan Warsawski specifically talked about that second period when they just could not do anything right.
Yeah, I mean, we got to skate. We got to be engaged with and without the puck. We got to play more physical. Everything, we did everything wrong tonight.
I mean, there's your summation, right? You don't need to hear that much more from Ryan Warsawski to know about his thoughts on this game, about what the Sharks did right, about what the Sharks did wrong, and what they can learn from it. I mean, we keep on going back to this same conclusion, is that the Sharks aren't good enough. They weren't good enough 2 years ago, they weren't good enough last year, and they weren't good enough this year. Now, the results of all this is that you're bringing in players like Will Smith and Quentin Musty and Macklin Celebrini and Sam Dickinson and, of course, whoever they end up drafting this year with their high pick overall. So they are getting something out of this, right? There's no lost season in the sense that there isn't a positive result, assuming your draft picks pan out. But the Sharks are giving themselves an opportunity to prepare for the future by way of draft picks, by way of, you know, whatever they end up doing at the deadline. They have options going forward, but we're talking about the future. We're talking about a time period that is not right now, and we can, you know, moan about how bad they are right now, but I won't say it's specifically by design in the sense that you don't want to lose 6-2 to Seattle, but they aren't supposed to be good right now. This is supposed to be a time to get the cap costs down, to line yourself up for success in the future with young players, with veterans who can help the development of those young players, to where you're going to make signings in the near future and in the distant future that are hopefully going to set you up for future success. That's what the Sharks are doing right now. They are trying to give themselves all the options they need to get the players in line for the future. And I'm not trying to be negative in saying that it's not about right now, because I always go back and say, yes, we want to be entertained. We want to win. We want to see results out there on the ice, but that's not what is happening right now. The Sharks are aligning themselves and preparing themselves for a future that will make us forget about the dark times that are happening right now. I mean, think about what we saw from Colorado for those years where they were really down. Think about what we saw from the Astros in Major League Baseball. Think about what we saw from the Warriors. You know, they eventually brought in the right players in their draft to set themselves up for success. All right, let's bring in Roxy Bernstein, who I talked with before last night's game, about where the Sharks are right now. Roxy, you know the Sharks. It's been bad for a couple years, and suddenly Macklin Celebrini, Will Smith, Yaroslav Askarov, I mean, these three players look like the future. And listen, I know that it's a national call, you're impartial, but being as how you are affiliated by proximity, you must notice the way that people are now looking at the Sharks.
The energy is different around this organization now. That for years it was treading water, you know, after the 2019 bow out in the playoffs and trying to get back to the playoffs and trying to do the quick fix, all right, how do we adjust? How can we move forward? And it just wasn't working. And finally, Mike Greer was brought in to rip off the Band-Aid and go in a different direction. And every move so far seems to have been a good move in terms of the trades, in terms of the talent he's acquired, bringing into the organization, the draft picks, getting the salary cap under control, which was an issue as well. But there's a different outlook, I think, now, and an excitement for this team in the direction they're heading just because of the work that Mike Greer has done and the talent he's brought in.
It's interesting. I juxtapose this with what's gone on with the Warriors, because I always make market comparisons where Bob Myers got out before he had to be the quote unquote bad guy and make those tough decisions. But Mike Greer, to your point, he made the trades and got the cap under control. He traded away Brent Burns and Timo Meyer and Erik Karlsson and Tomas Hertl. And those were all tough for fans to swallow. I feel until the moment that they got to see Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith on the ice together, because although they're still 18 and 19 year old respectively, the talent is there and there's suddenly an excitement and something new to pay attention to. Whereas the story had been so similar for the Sharks for so long. It was Jumbo, it was Patty, it was Logan, it was Hertl, Pavs, Burns, etc. And then, you know, this is the first time, not only the energy that you allude to, but there is a new identity for the team in terms of personalities.
And that's, I think, appealing to the fan base as well. When you have these new, young, talented players coming in, and some of the little subtleties you see, like, for example, the bet that Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini had over the college hockey game the other night, and they had to wear the winner's jersey. Like, those are fun things to see. And there definitely is a new energy, and it was needed. And for as great as that run was, that when Doug Wilson did so many good things along the way, getting the cup final in 2016, the numerous appearances in the Western Conference final, winning a President's Trophy, the accolades that were there for the organization. But you have to rip off the Band-Aid at some point. Those runs can't last forever. We saw it with the 49ers, right? We've seen it with the Oakland A's and the dynasty that they had. And even the Warriors now, I think, are in a precarious situation because the window could be closed for them in terms of winning another title with this core of Steph Curry and Draymond Green, et cetera. And what the Sharks had to do was hit the restart button. And they got lucky in terms of winning the lottery last year. And it just so happened that the number one pick appears to be a generational type player who also had ties to the San Jose Sharks and the Bay Area.
Right.
It's such a unique situation. And you add pieces around them. And let's face it, the way this season's going, more than likely the Sharks are going to have another very high pick in the draft, which is going to accumulate even more talent for this organization. And I think that you're looking at a franchise in a couple of years that really could be in a position to make a move.
You mentioned the term generational talent when talking about Macklin Celebrini. What has jumped out to you when you've watched him play?
Aside from the skill, Ted, and we see it, how gifted he is with his shot, with his IQ. But the one thing that has jumped out to me that I didn't necessarily know and how it would translate to the NHL is I saw him play when he was at BU is his compete level and the way he's willing to battle and the little things that he does and the toughness that he has shown for a young kid to come into the league and have those qualities immediately is really eye-opening to see. That, okay, Connor Bedard comes in with his speed and his offensive talent. He's a brilliant player to watch. But for me, I give the edge to Celebrini when people are making the comparison because of that compete level, because of the other characteristics that he brings to the ice, that he's a two-way player, and that he's also willing to pay the price in terms of physically. And that's what you need to see from a player that's going to be, I think, a cornerstone to a franchise. That's what Celebrini appears to be. It's a lot to put on the plate of an 18-year-old, but he's showing the ability to handle it, and he's got all the foundational pieces that you love to see in terms of a player you want to build around.
Will Smith has also shown great promise up to this point, and I think his game is really starting to take strides. He's had some great plays lately where he's turned defense into offense, which to me is a big sign of progression and development. And I've made the argument that Will Smith's greatest problem is that he's constantly being compared to Macklin Celebrini, because when you look at his stats versus his production level versus his draft class, he's right up there with the top guys. And even if you look at the Calder race this year, he's not exactly that, you know, far down the list. He's just not maybe quite yet where Macklin Celebrini is. And Roxy, the funny thing about this is it's like people want these 18 and 19 year old guys, and whether it's, you know, Macklin and Will or Matvei Michkov or Connor Bedard, they want them to be complete players already. I'm like, guys, do you remember what you were doing at 19 years old? We were worried about getting to the Sharks game, not playing in it, right?
I was just worried where my next beer was coming from when I was 19. When I was in my sophomore year at Cal.
And that was a valid concern.
It was a very important Friday evening thought process in terms of, okay, where am I going to get my fun tonight? but for Will Smith, it's been interesting to watch this season play out for him, right, Ted? Because early in the year, there were some struggles. And there was a big learning curve for Will Smith in terms of adjusting to the NHL game coming from Boston College. As brilliant as his season was last year, I think the adjustment was a little tougher for him than it was for Celebrini. And we saw him get healthy scratched early in the year, and it was a learning day for him. But now he's been a mainstay as he really has developed his game this season in terms of paying attention to the little things. Defensively, when you talked about going from defense to offense. And that's something that you're doing it at the highest level. It's not like, okay, he goes from Boston College to the AHL, has an adjustment with the Barracuda, and then makes the move to the NHL. That there was a step that was jumped because of how talented he is. Mm-hmm. And now that you're seeing Will Smith figure things out at the NHL level, it really is a unique situation.
When we look at the looming deadline, how many moves do you expect to be made in San Jose? Or are you just kind of waiting to see the, you know, what is on the table exactly? Because, you know, it's a 15-32-6. I don't think there should be too much qualms about trading guys away because they're not in the chase. But at the same time, I know Mike Greer doesn't want to feel like he is forgetting about the fan base, the people who are investing time and money into this team.
But you also have to think about the big picture, which he has done recently. When you're making the trades and sending Timo Meier to New Jersey or Tomas Hertl to Vegas, you're going to have to make tough decisions here at the deadline. If Mikhail Granlund, for example, mm-hmm. if you can get an attractive return for a player that has the potential to be a top six forward on a contending team, I think you're going to do it. If it betters the organization, and the same thing, look, with Sturm being injured right now, you see where he is approaching the deadline, but that's another piece that would be attractive to some teams. Those are the decisions that he's going to have to make. Are you going to move on with one of the goaltenders when Manichak comes back? And Georgiev here, do you make a deal if somebody needs a netminder? And also to make moves so Askarov can play at the NHL level on a regular basis. These are some of the decisions he's got to make. But there are some pieces that I do believe some contending teams would want to help their cause. And let's face it, you have something that potentially they want. Now you can also help and get more talent for your organization if they're going to give you a high draft pick for it, or a young player or a prospect.
To hear the entirety of that interview, check out the Build Up Game 54 versus Seattle on the Sharks Audio Network On Demand podcast, where you can hear his thoughts on Seattle and some of the things that we have seen with them. But yeah, you know, it's interesting to get Roxy's take, obviously the Bay Area guy, and you know, the Sharks are in a unique position as to what comes next. That's my favorite aspect about this, is they've given themselves a chance for the future. And while the present is not a whole lot of fun, especially not on nights where they unexpectedly get hammered 6-2. Guys, I was not expecting that. That maybe felt worse than the Florida game, because Florida, they're the reigning champs. They're a great team. Seattle is not. Seattle's not that far away from where the Sharks are, and the Sharks just did not have it last night. But I digress. But the Sharks, you expected more out of them last night. You expected more pushback. I know the injuries are there. I know it's a tough year, but they just need to put forth a better effort. They need to be more effort-filled overall. And I'm not saying that they didn't put out, you know, an effort at all. They're always trying, but the bottom line is it wasn't good enough. All right, we are out of time for the San Jose Sharks. I'm Ted Ramey signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yeah.